Welcome everybody to the Son of Sam Chronicles. I'm Rocker Mike, Rob Rossi, Carl DeNaro, Howie Edelson. Welcome back everybody. We're back today with part two of Tying Up Loose Ends. Very important episode. This one definitely very important. We were talking in the last one about the first visit that Carl had made with David Berkowitz 2 years ago this month. Howie, you had a couple of things you wanted to add quick to that yeah. we kind of left out, so yeah. bring that.
Just a couple of personal things about talking about Co-op City with Berkowitz. I was real curious about where he was buying his albums, just like human stuff. And he had explained that there was one record store that had been gone by my time, but he had said he was that he had bought most of his records at Corvettes,
yeah.
which I got my records too. And I said, you know, David, what were you into? What were your bands? And he goes, I love the Beatles, I love the Stones, and Sabbath. I really got into Sabbath.
Wow, well, yeah.
And that's a weird thing for weird three, but that's a weird third band to go with Beatles and Stones. But you can just imagine, you know, he's finding some type of release.
There's no doubt. I mean, yeah, we all love Black Sabbath. There's no doubt there was a darkness to their music that he might have been attracted
mm-hmm,
to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
given the things. I mean, the first Sabbath album came out, I believe, in '69. I think I don't think it was huge right off the bat. It took another album or two for them to really break. You know, so you would say maybe by the time he got out of the Army, he was listening to Sabbath.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you know, he might have been attracted to that darkness. We don't know, but it's a safe assumption.
I thought that was just, you know, because I asked him, I said, you know, did you go to concerts? And he said, no, I didn't go to a lot of concerts. Do you remember any concerts? And he remembered going to a concert in Manhattan, and he remembered going to a concert in Queens, and he didn't remember who he had seen.
He didn't say where Manhattan. Could have been the Beacon.
Could have been the Fillmore. He didn't answer.
Probably the Fillmore.
which I thought was weird. It's like you got nothing but time to think about, you know.
Yeah.
All I do is think about the concerts I went to, you know, and that I'm going to, you know.
Yeah.
But so I was like, so I started throwing baseball because I knew he was a baseball kid. I said, you know, you stayed a Yankee fan throughout. And he was like, yeah. I said, who were your guys? Who were your favorite guys? And he said, Elston Howard and Hector Lopez.
Wow.
And it was like, okay. And then nothing. It wasn't why I loved them, their backstory, and it was like, you know,
that's it.
Mid-60s like. Yankees, and, you know. But he, you know, that was a big part of, you know, bringing back that whole co-op thing. And I remembered when the morning he was caught, I remember my mother on the phone discussing how his parents had been friends with an older aunt and uncle of mine, which, you know, totally scared the shit out of me even more, you know? But like I had told you, we had seen him in the, and he had remembered the court that I lived in. He said he had fond memories of the court. It was this Deb's Place court in co-op. And as I had told you, my sister and I had seen him about a year before, had to be a year before, because we had seen him. He was a Gene Wilder looking guy.
Yeah.
He looked like Gene Wilder. You know, he was
the
like
hair
he just looked like that kind of guy, you know.
Right.
And so he was a very distinctive face, although a schlubby guy. My sister and I had been looking out our window, and there was a bench and a playground. And a guy who looked like he was wearing a janitor shirt, some type of, you know, uniform, was sitting with a girl. And we're watching, and my sister said to me, she said, he likes her, but she doesn't like him. And I said, how do you know? And she goes, I can tell. And I watched it, and he had a drink, some type of juice, and he pulled it in a way that it went all over his shirt. And we started laughing. And he shot us a look. And we were like, oh, shit. You know, but we thought they were just, like, on a date. We didn't, you know. And, you know, when caught, and it's that face, and all that shit.
You remember.
It was like, I was even more scared
than
I had been. Because it all
started. You realize you had contact with him.
Yeah, and especially, like, growing up in co-op, after that Esau, which was right there.
Yeah.
It was, you know.
Yeah.
It was fucked up shit.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the second visit that you made over the last summer. Go on.
Yeah, so June 8th. June 8th of 23, yeah. I went with, went up to Shawangunk prison with Mike Caparelli for my second visit with Berkowitz.
Dr. Mike Caparelli wrote this recent book called right. Monster Mirror.
Excellent book.
Excellent book. We had him on in the last two episodes of the show for an interview.
Right.
So you went upstate with him to see Berkowitz.
Yeah. I have to say that this visit was definitely not as traumatic as the first visit. I kind of, you know, I kind of knew what was going on. You know, as far as getting into the prison, the whole check-in process. I had already met Berkowitz, so that fear was kind of gone, but I'd be lying to say I wasn't, you know, still a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course.
You had an inclination, though, that you were going to be...
Well, Mike had said, he goes, you know, he over the previous 3 months, he had made statements like, you know, David wants to come clean. David's got something to tell you. You know, a few of my close friends I confided in leading up to this visit and saying, you know, what if he says this? What if, you know, just kind of looking for feedback from people I know and trust. So I guess it was kind of like preparation for whatever he was going to tell me.
Right.
So, it, you know, we kind of went in. It was uneventful, to be honest with you. You know, we checked in and went through the labyrinth of closing doors. And we go sit down, and David comes down and sits across from us. Now, unlike the first visit, how he had described that winding desk. But there's actually a few of those. We were sitting in one that was actually a semicircle. Okay. So the prisoners sit on the inside of the semicircle, and the visitors sit across the table. The table's probably 18 inches deep. So, you know, Mike and I sit down, Berkowitz walks in, we shake hands, we say a prayer, and we start talking. Mike did most of the talking in the beginning.
I'll just interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
Dr. Mike Caparelli has, you know, said that he has spent over 100 hours with David.
Right.
So
yeah. So
he was probably looking to make you comfortable with Burke.
Yeah, and I, you know, Dr. Caparelli had a lot to do with my lack of nervousness because, as Mike just pointed out, he had already spent, at that point, I think he spent about 95 hours with Berkowitz.
More than anybody, really.
And, you know, I was excited with the anticipation of getting answers. I was hoping it would be a little bit more productive than the first meeting. So, you know, we said a prayer, and then we just started talking, and it was very light, very similar to the visit that Trish Howie and I did. We just kind of like how's the weather kind of thing when we started out. And then, you know, me being my who I am, about, I don't know, 5-6 minutes of that stuff, and I was like, all right, let's get to it. You know, I got questions, I want answers. I mean, I was very polite, don't get me wrong, but you know, I only wanted to listen to so much.
You can bullshit with your neighbor.
Yeah.
Kumbaya,
you know. Kumbaya, right. So I started asking questions, and You know, and again, there were kind of softball questions just to get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
And again, we don't have a tape recorder. That's a whole nother issue. You got to get special permission. You can't bring in paper or pen. I'm going to be honest with you. The questions I was asking were, I know there were softball questions. I know he's not gonna give me names. So my questions certainly weren't that. I'll be honest with you, I really don't remember exactly how I started this questioning. But it got to the point where I started asking questions. You know, David. I'm up here. I'm up here for the second time. I'm looking, as you know, I'm looking for answers. I've been looking for answers for a long time. I said, you know, I want to know who shot me. And I mean, it's as simple as that. And with that, if you know me, you know I have a tendency to just like go full barrel once my the adrenaline starts, and I'm just like that, and David said something, and I keep talking, and Dr. Caprielli again grabs my arm and says, "Carl, David's trying to talk to you." Like, what?
But guys, it's like Carl's like, it's like Godzilla and Godzuki. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's...
Now I'm a little bit revved up to begin with, and I stop talking, and David looks at me right in the eye and says, "Carl, I shot you." Well, you can imagine my reaction.
You must be shocked.
I'll tell you, I was totally shocked. I had emotions that I don't even know what they were. It was just, my mind is racing. You have to realize, you know, 47 years of, you know, a woman shot me, or
not, whoever,
you know, whoever, somebody
was it
shot
David,
me.
Was it, not
it wasn't
David?
It wasn't Berkowitz. He only did the shootings in the Bronx. In the 90s, I was told by David Berkowitz that a woman shot me. So this all came.
And you didn't feel set up, because you had said that Caparelli had said David's got something that he wants to tell you, and didn't you kind of vibe that he knew what David was going to tell you? That's a sucker punch. That's a bullshit move.
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure. I mean, Mike was very clear that David, you know, two things that he told me was, you know, David wants to come clean and David has something to tell you.
Wow.
So, and it was, it's, you know, I spoke to Mike a few times. I spoke to Howard a few times. I spoke to Trish, some other people, though I won't name, you know, good friends of mine who are involved in the case. And I said, what do you think? And, you know, and basically, like I said, I was just trying to come up with, if he names a woman, or if he says he shot, you know, obviously that was a.
What were you expecting? Seriously, what were you exactly expecting that from him?
What was I expecting? I was expecting what I was led to believe for the last 35 years.
But also, you had you a name. You thought he was going to give up a name.
I was hoping he'd give up a name, but I at least he'd give me more information on the whole woman, a woman shot you.
But going back to the first visit the year before, mm-hmm. you had walked out of there, you know, believing that Berkowitz was involved and at your shooting, but not necessarily.
He told me.
Yeah, that's what he said. Right. We talked about
and
that in the last episode.
And he led Carl to believe mm-hmm. that this was the beginning of more to come.
More information. Paul to come.
Had said wow. certain things okay. to him about when and if. And
so
this,
then,
there was a plan.
So right. then in this visit, you are talking to him, going on, hitting him in questions, and he just blurts this out.
That's right.
Okay. Is it? Did you get a sense of like, you know, he's just trying to shut me up?
Okay. Initially, I didn't get a sense of anything except.
What did he say?
Maybe almost panic.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of like, you know, it seemed a lot longer. It was probably 5 or 6 seconds. And I finally grabbed Mike's arm, and I said, Mike, you got to help me. And, you know, I don't know what to say. So Mike kind of took over in his soothing pastoral voice, and kind of didn't really address the issue, but just kind of calmed me down. And I gained my composure. Again, I really don't know how long it took, but I would say half, 30 seconds.
Okay. What was Berkowitz's exact demeanor?
I wasn't even looking at him. I mean, I was looking at him when he said it, but after that, I was just kind of like, I was doing a Berkowitz. You know?
Did you say, well, what about the woman that you said?
Well, that's what happened. So after like 30 seconds, I kind of gained my repulsion. Now I'm still reeling. But I gained enough composure to start firing questions. Now I'm back into my, my interview mode. And, so I said, so who is with you? Doesn't answer. So I said, let me get this straight. I said, you told Maury on national TV in 1993 that a woman shot me. 2 years ago, I was here, and you told me to my face that you saw me get shot.
Wow.
And you were there, and you took full responsibility because you could have stopped it.
You said that, yes.
That's what you said. Now you're telling me that you shot me. So I said, if you shot me, so you've been lying this whole time. And again, he's just staring. Now he doesn't bow his head, or he just kind of stares at me. And I said, so you lied to Maury, you lied to me, and now you're telling me you shot everyone. I said, let me ask you a question. Same question I asked you last time. How did you find me? I was just driving around. I said, bullshit again. Then I said, what about the house party? Supposedly there was a party two blocks away. From my shooting, and was there a party at that house, or were you there? And he said yes.
Mm. Yeah.
So
that's
very telling.
Crazy.
Because he didn't have to offer that up.
You got to hang it out with Wayne's, basically.
Right. So, yeah. So because it's been one of my things that's like, besides who shot me, it's like, how the hell did they find us? Because I'm convinced they didn't follow us. There's just so many reasons why they couldn't have followed us from Peck's. You know, Rosemary showed up an hour before me. There was no plans for us to meet that night. There was no plans for us to leave that night. So somebody would have to follow either me or Rosemary and sit in a car for an hour and a half, hoping that these two, and
not only that, Berkowitz went back to that house after the shooting. Well, it was probably before you pulled away, he was probably running back to that house.
But hold on, so hold your thought, Carl, for a second. That kind of ties into what Rosemary said. Okay, Rosemary said at some point that there was somebody following her. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so he might have been looking around and saw her.
That was at 7 o'clock. That was 7 o'clock in the evening.
Followed her to the area, maybe waited for her to come out of Peck's.
No? She dropped her sister off at a party, actually not too far from here, in Belrose. Okay. She drove back to Flushing, North Flushing. I'm not even sure where this Mary lives, but I know she lives like at the border of Flushing and Bayside. Okay. Not really near, certainly not in walking distance of Peck's. And she was going to this party, and now it's like 7:30. And she goes into the party and says, somebody was following me.
At that point.
Right. So this person would have to sit in front of this girl Mary's house for 4.5 hours, then follow Rosemary to Peck's, then sit in front of Peck's in front of an hour. Okay. And this is, you know, I mean...
And then shoot the passenger?
Well...
It's almost like a,
right.
Yeah, that's, a state cop.
So yeah, the whole thing is very bizarre.
That's probably unlikely.
So, to you know, one of Mike, one of Dr. Caparelli's things, and, you know, me speaking to him about this whole confession, he goes, well, you have to understand, David is ashamed. Now,
The confession you're talking about is in Mike Caparelli's book, Monster Mirror, David confesses to all the murders.
Well, right now, I'm not talking about that.
Okay.
I'm just talking about, that was another condition when we went up, when Dr. Caparelli and I went up to see Berkowitz. He informed me that David would only talk about my shooting. He goes, don't even bother asking questions. So I guess when we left the prison in the parking lot, and, you know, we went out for a bite to eat afterwards, he talked again, which he mentions in his book, but he was talking about David being ashamed. And I get it, certainly. But what I don't get is you're face-to-face with a victim, and you blurt out, Carl, I shot you, and then you won't give up any more information.
Right. You try to get details.
It's like, to me, if you're ashamed, the hard part is saying, Carl, I shot you. After that, you should have diarrhea of the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and all the other,
the hardest part is admitting it. Yeah.
I drove over here. And I did press him on this. I said, you know, I said in other confessions and interviews, you know, you have given facts about pre and post shooting. And he just wouldn't give anything up. So I guess conclusion of the meeting was I walked out of there totally confused. But by the next morning, I came to the conclusion that I have been had again. That there's no two ways of I can't take it any other way. I guess again, once you say you shot me, the rest should be real easy. And it's like, and I at one point I even asked him. I said, you don't even have to give me names. Just like, you know, was there other cars there? Was there a lookout? What, you know? And he would not answer any of those questions. Which again, you admitted you shot me. The other stuff should be easy. So
yeah.
So I spent the next couple of months, to be honest with you, kind of mulling this whole thing over and starting, you know, trying to put things together. And Mike, you know this as you know, and Rob, we've been doing a bunch of these podcasts, and I guess about 8 months ago, I came to the conclusion that we have all this information. You know, the DA drop and the confessions and interviews. I came to the conclusion that the only way I'm going to get the answers I want is from David Berkowitz himself. And which is why I was so willing to go up with Dr. Caparelli again. Because believe me, it's not an easy thing. I mean, I know some people think, wow, that's really cool. It's not as cool as you think.
No, I never thought it was cool.
It's nerve-wracking.
It took a lot of guts to do it, I can tell you that.
And
when we were there the first time, Carl went up to get Berkowitz a iced tea. And I'm just there with Trish. And I say to him, "So why don't you just say it all? Why don't you just name the names?" Well, I go, nobody gives a shit.
Oh, you said that
anymore.
To David when Carl walked away.
I said, nobody gives a shit anymore. I go, it's 200 people. I go, it's a tiny amount of people that are obsessed with this case.
Yeah.
I was like, just do it already.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, I just kind of vomited it out. Because that's what I wanted to say. Just fucking do it.
What was the reaction?
And he, like, looked at me, but he looked at me. I would like to think that he was looking at me and thinking... Yeah, why don't I? But, it is, you know.
I can honestly say, I don't know prison life.
Yeah.
I don't think all of the people, I think everybody's dead. And I think there's a part of him that's romanticized his own existence in that I'm keeping this secret. I'm protecting relatives.
It makes him relevant.
Yeah.
You know,
it makes him relevant even in 2023. It makes him exist.
Maybe I'm wrong here, but I'm gonna say it. I think that's a personal, that's a human thing to try to at least give yourself some, you know, we all have pride. Some have too much. Some have a little, you know, it's probably the only thing that he has.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know what? I think that's
what Dr. Caparelli was trying to get. It's like, you know, not only the embarrassment, but,
It's all he's got.
You know,
yeah, and you know,
it doesn't help me, but
you know, on one, you know, one side of it, you say he's a monster and he did these murders, and that's all legit, okay. But also, you know, I'm not without.
You think he's taking the high road by saying by not stopping it, by being a part of it? I shot you too. I killed your child too.
Well, that's
the high road. You think?
No, I don't know.
Well, he was after
many hours of thinking about it. I came to the conclusion that I've been writing Berkowitz. It was probably 15, 16 letters over the last 3 years.
Mostly haiku.
Yeah. I don't even know what that is.
Haiku.
So then the two visits. He knows exactly what I want. You know, and everyone knows. Yeah. I want to know who shot me and how'd you find me. That's
two simple questions that.
By him saying, "Carl, I shot you," he takes away everything that I need.
Yeah.
Because what else you want, Carl? I just told you I shot you.
Yeah.
It gets me off his back because I think his conscience is every time he corresponds with me. I can't go into the letters. Some of the letters are in my book, but I don't even know how to put this into words. I think it bugs him. It's like that he's communicating with me, and I can't really tell you. You know.
But you mentioned just now before that, you know, the only answers you're going to get are from David Berkowitz.
Yeah.
Now, that's legit, but at the same time, he lies. How would you believe?
All right. So you just answered the question for the one or two people that have wondered where I've been the last 8 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, has nothing to do.
Rumors were going all over the place.
It has nothing to do with me having a falling out with Rock and Mike and Rob.
That'll never happen.
I came to the conclusion that the answer is going to come from Berkowitz.
Yeah.
And then in June, I had an opportunity to talk to him, and he kind of convoluted the whole thing more than it already was.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, look, let's just tell it like it is, okay? There's a lot of toxicity in this Son of Sam community. All right, and I'm going to just throw it out there. We don't talk about it on the shows all that much, very, very little. Not naming names. I'm not going after, not even going to give any legitimacy to anybody by naming their names. Okay.
Or no social life.
Okay. Carl, this 47 years you've been dealing with a metal plate in your head and no peripheral vision in your right eye and the notoriety of being a victim. You've had a full life, okay? You have things, everything is outside of Son of Sam. You don't live the Son of Sam every day of your life.
No.
Okay? It's there, you know it, okay, and you've lived it, but you have a lot of things. And I gotta commend you and hand it to you because you know, you're like, I don't know, some people would have fell to pieces over it.
Yeah,
okay? Some people did.
And the other victims don't talk. And that's their right, okay? But you were the most outspoken victim. And, you know, you our shows were you know, when we started with you, the idea was we were going to be your mouthpiece. That was the one thing,
mm-hmm.
okay? And, of course, your mouthpiece means we were going to discuss things from mostly the Maury Terry angle, okay? From your angle, your specific perspective as a victim. And also, we were going to bring in different ideas, things that never were discussed before. Things that never, different angles on things, okay? Now, some of them were maybe a little out there. Some of them make sense. But we were open to anything. And we were also open to the idea of Berkowitz as the only shooter, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of evidence. I mean, things have come up based on other shows out there over the last couple of years that, yeah, it may be possible. We had Neo on for several months. Neo did a lot of research, and that is his conclusion, and he may be right. Okay. There's also a lot of evidence the other way. Chris Jr., who did a lot of research for us, had that. Okay? So, basically, we don't know. We didn't get anywhere as far as advancing the case, other than maybe on little peripheral things.
Yeah.
Other podcasts solved little peripheral things, things that don't matter. Okay? Now, getting into Dr. Caparelli for a second, I just put it out there. I think he was a great interview. He's a great guy. I like him. I think he's a good man. He's done this fantastic book from a totally different perspective than any other Son of Sam book out there. Okay? He came on our show for 2 episodes. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah.
And but with his book, now some people are doing their cherry picking. Okay, this is what they do. They cherry pick the facts. They say, okay, this works for what I'm trying to say, so Berkowitz is telling the truth. Oh, this doesn't work for what I'm trying to say, so Berkowitz is a liar. And that's how it's been in the community for a couple of years now.
So it makes it difficult.
Makes it very difficult. So in our interview, I want to make something clear. Again, tying up loose ends is the basis of this show. All right, so... Mm-hmm. We had Dr. Mike on. We filmed the episode in the middle of September. It was before his book was out.
Yeah.
It was also before he had his big national interview on the 700 Club and some other things that he had.
Yeah.
He had expressed to us 2 things. He said he wanted us to wait to put the video out until after his national appearance, which he was contractually obligated to do.
Yeah.
So we were like, no problem. We will hold back. We had the video in the can for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay? The other thing was he didn't want to talk about the cult. Now, I had no problem with that because, and neither did Rob, because we weren't doing those 2 interviews with Mike from a perspective of the shootings and, you know, was there a cult? Was there not a cult? Was there other shooters? Nothing like that. It was from a mental health perspective. Okay? Totally. And we were complimented like crazy for it. I think it was a good angle that we did.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, also, at the time of the filming, I hadn't read the whole book, okay, because I didn't have access to it. I had access to...
Well, he sent us some few
He chapters. Sent us chapters, but not the whole book. So, at the time, I wasn't even aware of the confession.
Right.
Okay. It was irrelevant anyway because we weren't going to talk about it, all right? But I didn't know until after the fact. So, basically, if you read Mike's book, there's a confession in there by Berkowitz that he shot everybody. Okay. He said that before. He has said that to Abramson, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So there's also another part of the book where he says that he met the Carr brothers in the eastern part of the Bronx and was, you know, involved with satanic stuff with them, okay? They told him to buy a satanic Bible. You know, the magical child was the store, was the place to buy it, all that stuff. So
he also talked about the process.
The process church as well. Okay. So, you know, again, and this is not a shot at Mike Caparelli. He made a great book, and I'm not trying to diss him in any way or say his facts are all wrong. What I'm trying to say is that it doesn't solve the case. And that wasn't Mike's objective in his book, to solve the case.
No, it wasn't solved.
But people are taking, and you know who you are out there, okay? You're taking this book, and you're saying, oh, okay, he confessed. Oh, end of story. It's over.
Case
I win.
Closed.
Blah, 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 blah. Case closed. Okay? Well, that's an asshole way to be, all right? Because you're ignoring the other part of it. So if you're going to believe Berkowitz, believe him. But it's obvious... that he can't tell the truth all the time.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and more specifically.
End of rant.
You know, there's been, we all know that there's several sources of information. You know, the DA, the confession the day after his arrest, Abramson, Klausner, Maury Terry, numerous interviews with journalists, interviews with religious people.
Yeah.
It's all a mishmash. But what Berkowitz said, and this is, I'm lapping onto what you just said. What Berkowitz said in Dr. Caporelli's book, this is like, a snapshot. It's not 20 years ago. It's all in the same book. He talks about meeting the Carr brothers, the process church, the satanic rituals, Untermeyer Park. And then he wraps it up with, I did all the shootings.
And he says that it was inspired, that cult activity inspired his acts.
Ooh. So
he had to be aware of it.
Right.
No, well, Berkowitz is saying that.
Yeah.
All of this stuff fed into, right. But didn't direct it.
Right.
Mm. Okay.
So I guess it's possible, and again, this is an assumption on my part, but just taking that,
the microcosm of what I just said that's in Dr. Caporelli's book, it to me it doesn't make sense. I shot everyone myself, and nobody else was involved, but the process, the Carr brothers, the Untermeyer Park, satanic rituals. So you want me to believe
I think he can't wipe his fingerprints off that stuff.
So you were involved with the process, the Carr brothers, Untermeyer Park, satanic rituals, but yet you decided on your own to buy a .44 and shoot people over a 13-month period, all by yourself, without, no one knew about it. Sorry, I just don't buy it.
And then you have to look at, the sketches don't all match.
Well,
okay, and all these other things that lead—it's
a thousand
that lead to the assumption of that there had to be multiple shooters, okay, and multiple involvement.
Can I put this into rock terms that we can understand?
Okay,
this new confession is Berkowitz's new album.
Okay,
this is what keeps him.
I like that.
Even though he's always, I don't want the press. I don't want. He's always ready for the interview. He knows where to get out of how the mic gets set up.
He feels embarrassed, but he's ready for a new interview.
He's so embarrassed, but this is the new album. So this is going to keep him in the public vernacular, and maybe he benefits from it, from donations, from groups or whatever.
Right.
Maybe this is how, maybe that by, coming clean after coming clean, now I'm really coming clean, it keeps him in the spotlight. For someone who's a lifer like that,
Maybe that's all he's got.
Maybe that's all he's
like
got.
Just like the new album, everybody heard the new Beatles song that absolutely sucks.
No, now and then
this,
sucks.
This thing, this new confession sucks, pretty much. Yeah. It's like the new Beatles song. Let's just put it in simple. It's just anybody can understand it.
But so, it's also
this is the
like,
AI
what,
version of
where else do you go? Other than the truth, how do you release a new album?
Yeah.
And it's like... what he's doing, he's releasing an old album as a new album.
It's like the 20th remaster of LAMF or one of these albums that's been out for 1,000 years.
It's but just remastered and redone.
You know what I really think? Right. Don't be surprised when I think David is setting this thing into plan. When he die, I guarantee he's going to have this whole freaking confession thing.
All right.
With the real thing.
You want to go into
I really think that
Paul's
at the
got
end,
something.
He said, I told everybody, and this is going to be something, and this is what happened.
Paul has something with that, Rob.
So let's go with
one,
this.
One thing that Howie and I forgot to talk about in the first place.
I didn't forget. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. So at one point towards the end of our 3.5-hour conversation, this is the first visit. I said, David, I said, did you ever write this whole story down? And he said, no. I said, maybe you should write it all down. Don't, no lies. Tell, and you're writing to yourself. Just write everything down. Who was involved, how it went down, what dates, whatever information
names.
You have. Put it in an envelope, seal the envelope, give it to your lawyer, with the instructions that upon my death, give this to Carl DeNaro. And
like a deathbed confession.
He said, I forget the exact words, but he said something to the effect of, you gave me something to think about.
Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah.
But so you gave me something to think about.
Right.
Well, so we were like, that was our big.
Well, that's when we left. I was kind of pumped up. Next time I see him, he's going to tell me something.
A little did I know that would just be, in my opinion, just another lie. I want to talk about, not to beat the dead horse, but, it kind of goes in with, picking and choosing what you want to report to prove your case. Before I get into that, though, I do want to say one thing. Somebody said that I'm pigeonholed. I'm cornered and I'm pigeonholed because I wrote a book. I wrote a book called The Son of Sam and Me, The Truth About Why I Wasn't Shot by David Berkowitz. So because that's in the title of the book, some people think that I'm pigeonholed and I'll never admit that David Berkowitz was a lone shooter and David Berkowitz shot me. Believe me. Well, I'll first talk about the book. I had no intentions of writing a second book, but if I truly believe that David Berkowitz shot me, I got another book
ready to be written. But he did.
Why didn't you believe he did?
Yeah, it's like, boy, was I taken,
Probably do even better.
The problem is, I still don't believe Berkowitz is telling the truth. And again, I went over it already in Dr. Capriello's book. Why would he talk about the Process Church and the Carr brothers if he acted alone? Now going back.
But let me just hold your thought for a second. Let me just jump in here. Like what you were saying before, the hardest part is telling you he did it.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
If that was a legitimate confession, the next following step, the immediate sentence after that is the details. And that would be easy. You'd have diarrhea of the mouth and you would be able to just speak about the next part of it. Okay? That didn't happen.
No.
So it just reeks of insincerity.
Right. And another
and it's sadistic. It's a sadistic thing.
It is a sadistic thing to do.
Because I did it and I'm not gonna tell you anything about it.
Now another thing that was that he said was I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
I didn't mean to do that to you.
when he was talking about Nason Moskowitz, and how, I'm sorry, before that, he was talking about, he mentioned something to the effect of, I'm so sorry I did that interview. I was kind of coerced into it. Now, I think we all know he was talking about the interview with Maury Terry.
The 93.
The only thing is, we don't know. He did too.
Yeah.
So if it was in 93 where he told me that he lied to Maury Terry about a woman shooting me, I'm assuming that's the interview he was referred to and ashamed that he got coerced into doing it. Why in God's name did he do another interview with Maury Terry in 1998? And continue these lies. So,
the next thing is Nason
Moskowitz. He laments that he never got a chance to tell Nason Moskowitz that I shot your daughter Stacy. So that was well over 10 years ago, probably closer to 15, that she passed away. So now he's got an opportunity with another victim. In 21, me.
He bullshits him for 2 years.
And he bullshits again. And then 2 years later, he makes up another story and says, yeah, I did shoot you.
It seems like he has shame 30 years after the fact.
For anyone that thinks they can, I mean, yeah, you can pick and choose and make your own story,
absolutely.
But it's not realistic, and it's not based in reality.
Right.
You got to take everything. And like I said, one good thing about Mike's book is it's all right there in one chapter. And, you know, you don't have to compare, a confession in 77 with an interview in 93. This is all in real time, one chapter of Dr. Mm-hmm. Caparelli's book, and there's discrepancies all over the place.
And also for the naysayers, from what I've read, all that I can say is, from knowing you, is that you've never really cared who shot you. You just wanted to know
what happened.
Who shot you? Like, at who, what, where,
yeah,
and what? Like, yeah. There's no, you're not, like, looking for vengeance. You're not looking, but it's like we talked about. It's
and
like this.
You I told Burke was
you can't scratch.
I think in the first paragraph of my book, I said, believe me, I'm not trying to sell you on a conspiracy. I said it would be so much easier if I was shot by David Berkowitz, I survived, and
that was the end of it.
And that's the end of the story. I said I got thrust into this story.
Yeah.
And the Carl more... also started his life, his adult life, thinking this guy had shot him, and went right ahead.
For 15 years.
The fork in the road is finding out what
12 years anyway. Yeah,
there were more people involved.
Yeah.
Like we all live these kind of lives where we kind of know why and what happens for there to be a left hook thrown in and changes your whole direction and you have no answers. That's a heavier load than being wounded.
Right.
And you don't know why, you don't know who, and the person who took the blame is jerking you around.
Right.
Yeah.
It was almost like watching the movie Crew, and they had three fucking endings.
Yeah, right. Take your pick.
That's a good movie.
Take your pick. Who did it? So it's pretty much what's like happening.
It could be
to
this,
you.
This, or this.
This is that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but we're a pretty popular podcast in this world with the Son of Sam world, and there's others, and nobody has proven anything. Nobody has come to an absolute conclusion. And it's not going to change until Berkowitz talks or somebody comes out with some other information. So basically, if you don't have anything else to say, Carl, I'm going to make an announcement here.
But wait, can I ask you a question?
Edward. Yeah.
Can I ask you on camera who you think shot everyone? Yeah.
Me, personally?
Yeah.
I believe in multiple shooters.
But for each, if I name them,
okay,
who you thought, you don't want to do that?
No, it's okay. I'm not answering.
I'm not gonna name names.
Okay,
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I do believe that. Let's put it this way, Maury Terry, is the reason we're all doing these podcasts. Okay, without him, there'd be no reason to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so he put out information that, for the time of 1986, was well researched and very hard to do, and he had to go through a lot of shit, to do it. Was he wrong about anything? Possibly. I'm sure he was. It really doesn't matter, okay? But that's where we differ from other people, because we recognize that Maury could have made mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay, but we don't believe, like others, that there was a malicious intent.
No.
That there was some kind of, malice behind what he's doing. That he wanted to get back at people. Mm-hmm. This guy spent half his life researching this case at a time when there was no internet.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And, really opened up a lot of doors and showed a lot of stuff that the cops had made mistakes in the case and all that stuff.
So
go ahead. Well, go ahead, Carl.
No, for now, I'm sorry.
Well, so to answer what you were saying, asking me, Howie, is I just will say, I don't think Berkowitz is the only shooter. I'm open to that if you could prove to me these other things are not true. Now, in the recent book, you got the conflicting things we just talked about. You have him confessing, which he's done before.
Yeah.
And then you also have him with the cars. Well, what's all that about? Okay? So, again, we don't have an answer. So, where we are in 2023, except for a little bit of peripheral things like maybe the Neto situation, things like that, the peripheral stuff, okay? We're in the same place as we were in 1986 when Maury Terry came out with the book. Do you agree?
Except there are more people.
More people interested, yeah.
And more people saying that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, barking dogs.
You were right. What you told Berkowitz is that there's only a few hundred people into this case. Okay, really into this case. All right? There's no international interest in the Son of Sam. I'm sorry.
No, there really isn't. No.
Okay? You go out of the tri-state area. Nobody knows what the hell this is. Are there true crime buffs in other places? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay? But I think, you know, it's 1,000 people, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay? That are into this, including us. Okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a big community. But, and what has happened, just to hop on this for a second, is you've had people throw wedges into this community that we end up fighting each other more than solving the case. Trying to solve the case.
That's what it's turned into. Which has a lot to do with why I haven't really posted anything or done a show because I really think it all lies with Berkowitz, and I think I've proven beyond a reasonable doubt that he can't be trusted.
If it was a deathbed confession, I might believe it.
Right.
I mean, that's usually acceptable.
I mean, he gives me a confession, and he backs it up with, after I shot you, we went back to Dorfler's house on 157th Street. You know, we had two beers,
details.
Smoked a joint, you know. And then maybe I could start believing him. But you can't just say, I shot you. And
shut up, I shot you.
I have to take full responsibility. His pat answer is, I have to take full responsibility because I could have stopped it. Well, again, that doesn't mean...
First of all, he couldn't. He didn't stop Moskowitz. He could have, but he didn't have the power to.
Right.
He tried to, and they said, shut the fuck up.
Unless he shot her.
Unless he's the shooter. Unless he was the shooter. But that case in itself is...
With a lot of people, to go along with what you said, I don't want to answer that question. Who I think the shooters are, because the only person that has done research into who the other shooters are is Maury Terry. And he may or may not be wrong. We could thank, I hate to say it, but we could thank the NYPD for not pursuing a lot of the leads. We can thank the court system for accepting a guilty plea on a serial killer, which never happens.
There should have been a trial.
Yep. There should have been a trial, and we wouldn't even be here because all our answers would have been answered at trial.
Things could have come out. You never know.
You know, a lot of people forget about the yellow Volkswagen. A lot of people make jokes about the yellow Volkswagen. Well, I can tell you, besides Maury Terry, I know for a fact because I have reports. The NYPD sent out bulletins to the Nassau County Police Department with the partial plate number and the description of the yellow Volkswagen. They were sent to all the precincts in Nassau County. I know this for a fact because I actually have a copy. That's really never been addressed.
So they took it seriously,
right? And that's the only point. That's the only point I'm making.
And if it had gone to court, like you just mentioned,
that
would have been brought up.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
And that could have opened up other things.
Right.
So,
and I guess the last thing is, in defense of Maury Terry, which, to be honest with you, I miss Maury. I love Maury, but I'm getting sick of defending him. It's an uphill battle. It's kind of like arguing politics. If you're on the left, I'm never going to convince you to come to the right, and vice versa. So it's kind of like pissing up a rope. But in defense of Maury Terry, I have seen his notes, or not all of them, but I've seen a lot of them. I can't believe a guy would lie to himself in his notes.
as some podcaster has mentioned, Maury never expected somebody to be looking, you know, into his book and how he lied. Well, if that's true, why would he be lying in his notes that he started writing up on napkins and pieces and scraps of paper back in 77, 78, up until his book came out? And then he continued after 4 editions of his book came out. He continued investigating. And why would he lie on his notes? You might want to accuse him of lying, and that so be it if that's what you feel.
You know what the one thing
you don't lie in your own notes.
You know what the one thing he said? He's dead, and his book is still making money. Think about that, because people are still buying it. People still want to read it. This is how people that still
and people get interested.
You want to read this book because it's one of those books that once you start reading, you can't put it down.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much.
And like I said, if someone can actually prove, without a doubt, that David Berkowitz pulled the trigger in all the shootings, I'm ready to write my second book.
I'd believe it.
Yeah.
I would believe it.
I keep saying, don't be surprised when he dies if he starts sending letters or he'll leave something to people.
He might do that.
He might give it to somebody, write this about me. This is what happened.
So, for right now, for me, I still communicate with you guys and a few other people, private messages.
Yeah.
I don't really post too much. I don't really trust the people who are out there because I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
I just see everything, as Mike mentioned earlier, it's more about, backstabbing and nitpicking as opposed to solving
teams,
the case.
Yeah.
But I talk to
what team you want?
I'm going to say 15, 16 people who are involved in private messages, and some information still coming out. There's more archives to be looked at, more notes to be looked at, I will continue doing that. But until something major breaks, like Berkowitz telling the truth or writing something out, I don't think there's a whole lot for me to do.
Okay, and that kind of leads up to the announcement that me and Rob want to make, and that is that this episode is going to be our last one for the Son of Sam Chronicles, at least for a while. There's a lot of gas left in the tank if we want to reopen it. Anytime anything breaks, we will be back on it. If Carl wants to come on and talk about anything, we'll be happy to do it. But I think it's run its course. We've been doing it now for 2.5 years, practically. I just want to say that, it's I've met some great people through it, okay? Carl, of course, you. I mean, we become solid friends over this, and that's great. And, Howie, man, you're great, too. Rob, you suck. No, just kidding.
That's what they all say.
No, but... And a lot of other people. I want to thank Chris Jr. I want to thank Neo.
Yeah.
Okay. And one guy in particular I want to thank real quick is this guy over here behind the camera.
Yeah.
Come around here, Eric.
Eric.
This is our cameraman, Eric Moore. Say hello.
Our sound guy.
Sound guy.
Say
editor.
Hello to the people. Lord, get
in there. There you go. Right. He does some of all the other podcasts, too. He's great.
Yeah.
Eric Moore. It just to real quick, the naysayers and the critics of our show, I don't really give you much thought. Okay, you're really a bunch of idiots. I'm sorry. You say things that you would never say to my face. You say things that really are just stupid. Okay, you're a bunch of losers and you basically don't have a life. Okay, outside of Son of Sam. All right, I do, and so does Rob. Okay.
Oh, I have a much better life than these people.
Than these people. Okay. You know who you are. I don't have to name you. You're sitting home in your house right now watching. And that's all I'm going to say about that. The good thing is that we're going on to other things. Rob and I want to stay in the true crime world. We have our other podcast, The Rock Show, The Rocker Mike and Rob Presents Interview Show, The Conspiracy 420 Show. But we're going to get into some other true crime things. It's going to be a little different.
Yeah.
Some of them might be a series where we'd have multiple episodes about the same topic. Some might be one-offs. Okay, so you never know. It's going to be a totally different thing. We're going to be starting that, I would probably think, after the new year.
Yeah.
I don't know, can you think of anything? I want to, you know, thank everybody, all our listeners.
I'd like to thank the haters because they watch us more than the people that like us. That's all I want to say.
Thanks for the views. Haters, thanks for the views. Okay.
Don't care. You know what? I don't give a fuck what anybody say. I don't live my life for that. I live my life for myself. If I can make somebody miserable, I won.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we live
rent-free in people's heads. I mean, they watch our views. They know when we go on the air. They know when, you know, how fast our shit goes up. They accuse us of things.
Better than Santa Claus.
Please, it's ridiculous. Okay? So, we're going to leave it at that. This is the end of the Son of Sam Chronicles for now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stay in the Facebook groups. And, yeah. You know,
me too.
Yeah, Carl will be there too. And we'll still talk and... You can always private message me or whatever, and all I can say, don't get drunk.
Get lumped up. And I'd like to say one more thing, the words of Jim Cornette. Thank you, fuck you, and bye.
Take care, people.